Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hao. Thank you for tuning in every single week and supporting the podcast. Without you, this would not be possible. I finally have a good friend of mine on this show. I've shared many business opportunities and collaborations with him, specifically with the AmCham team here in Ho Chi Minh City and Da Nang for many years, Luc Trelor. He is a partner at KPMG focused on strategy and healthcare. He's here today in the studio to share about his insights on that, but also the bigger picture here on Vietnam. So we're very happy to have him in the studio today. Luc.
Yes. Love the new studio. This is fantastic. And it's great seeing you. Congratulations on all your success so far.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to have you here today too.
Yeah, likewise.
And let's dive into
it. Let's do it.
Luc, we've been chatting off record just now over the past 20 minutes at the studio here, mm-hmm. talking about the prospects of Vietnam, how we're doing,
exactly.
how our businesses are doing. And let's just
paint that. Mobile, but not rich yet, what we said.
Yeah, Henry's. Henry's, in case you guys don't know, stands for high earning, not rich yet. A very exciting group of consumer class that's rising in Vietnam,
right.
people making more money. But not rich enough to like go buy a super nice car, but maybe in the future. You know, Luc's work is really deep into that whole macro picture,
correct.
Henry's included. So Luc, why don't we just start with an intro?
Sure.
Who you are, you're here in Vietnam for a number of years mm-hmm. now. Paint us that whole picture of how your journey has led you to where you are today as partner of KPMG Vietnam.
So I've been in Vietnam for about 6 years, a little over 6 years. I agreed to come down here about 7 years ago from China. Mm. I was based in Beijing, very similar job, same company, KPMG, helping build a strategy team there. Mm. I was in China for about 10 years,
okay.
mostly with KPMG, a little bit as a student, a little bit in drug development for US drug companies.
Okay.
Before that, in the US as a student, studying biochemistry and helping design new drugs, and then move to the side of the counter.
Okay. So you were a scientist, basically, and you're...
Aspiring scientist.
Okay, yeah. Well, there's a lot of those, you know.
Exactly.
I have a lot of friends of mine who, you know, were PhD students or you know, whatever they're studying, and they became a bit disillusioned with how the speed of things, obviously it takes a very long time. If you're a little bit more impatient, maybe you want to be implementing things. You want to be building strategies for those companies.
Yeah.
And that's what you've kind of done.
The most challenging part about science is disproving something is as valuable as proving it.
So why don't we just start with that? Like you moved from being an aspiring scientist into more strategy, more of a business outlook and things. Tell us about the decision behind that path.
Long time ago, I decided I wanted to do the business of science and not just the science.
Okay.
And then I moved into wanting to understand the broader business goals of companies, in that case, in China.
Mm.
You said something offline that was perfect, bringing Vietnam to the world and the world to Vietnam.
Mm.
At that point in time, just after the Olympics, it was a wonderful opportunity to bring China to the world in outbound investment and the world to China for a lot of companies that were just discovering Chinese investment.
Mm.
So it was a brand new time of opening up for China.
Yep.
And then 2015, 16, 17, I decided it was time to move on.
Mm.
And this awesome opportunity here in Vietnam opened up.
Right. How did you see the Vietnam opportunity from a China/American lens? Like what did it mean to you when you got that opportunity?
Yeah.
What was exciting about it, if anything?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a lazy comparison, but China does remind me of post-Olympics 2008, 2009, 2010 mm-hmm. China.
Mm.
The same kind of optimism, same kind of hunger for capital, talent, know-how, technology transfer, business opportunities, outbound expansion, new ideas, new talent, new training, new opportunities, new things to do. Like there's a hunger, there's a youthness. The average age of our office is like 22, when we're a very typical office here in Ho Chi Minh City. So there's an opportunity for growth that a lot of companies overseas are hungry to get access to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an opportunity to arbitrage that, to explain Vietnam to China, Vietnam to the rest of the world, and the rest of the world to Vietnam. So when I came down here, accepted the job 7 years ago, came down here 6 years ago. Actually, initially, it was quite challenging because Vietnam wasn't on global board's radar.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a top priority. When we'd take it to the global counts, they'd refer us to Singapore or Hong Kong or regional office.
Mm-hmm.
3-4 years ago, starting with the Trump trade wars, and then more recently COVID, and then more recently with geopolitical realities,
mm-hmm.
Vietnam has been elevated to a new status they didn't have before.
Wow.
So there's a real great opportunity for Vietnam right now. So now Vietnam is a tier one priority for a lot of companies globally.
And let's talk about the short-term prospects as well.
Sure.
It's obviously been a very tough year last year for everybody globally. People are saying this year might be the same, more of the same.
Yeah.
But at the same time, everyone's still like researching.
They're coming.
I'm sure like these days, you are entertaining so many people from out of town.
Correct.
They're all using their travel and entertainment budgets to come out to Vietnam.
Before it's canceled.
Yeah, before it's canceled. And just like trying to soak it in, trying to understand this place better.
Right.
So in those meetings that you're having, what are they trying to understand? As the head of strategy for KPMG, what are you telling them? Like, what do they want to know?
Right. There are two types of clients that are coming to Vietnam right now. Mm. We're specifically talking about clients that are overseas coming into Vietnam. We could talk about in Vietnam or Vietnam going out if you'd like as well. But coming into Vietnam, there are export-oriented manufacturing, so companies that are looking for the China plus one model. Mm. Maybe they have a large footprint in China and they're looking to diversify offshore, reshore some of their production, their footprint, to re-rationalize it into other places in Southeast Asia.
Okay.
That's not just for cost reasons, it's for other geopolitical considerations. So those are the manufacturers. And then there are the emerging group that I'm most excited about. And those are the ones that are trying to tap into the emerging middle-class consumer in Vietnam. Mm. That's the new story for Vietnam. And that's the 3 to 5 year story that's going to be really, really exciting to watch. As we have a million people every month, every year, moving into the cities, one of the largest 18, more or less, year old populations on the planet.
Yeah. And you mentioned the middle-class thing too. And I read a statistic online. It's not audited, so forgive me if it's incorrect, but best of my knowledge. You look at all the countries in the world talking about the middle class, how many people are entering the middle class? And from what I saw online, Vietnam is a top five country for the number of people entering the middle class.
Right.
So as you would expect, China and India are top two just because of size of population. Next is like Thailand and Brazil. And then Vietnam was in that group of top five, 4 million.
Right.
That's what I read.
You've seen absolute numbers or ratio numbers?
Absolute.
Okay, wow.
Number of new people entering the middle
class. That's impressive.
Yeah, 4 million. So, of course, you know, I'm not sure what constitutes middle class in Vietnam, but
it varies by
province and all that. But just in general, at a high level, you know, when you look at all these other global economies, when they enter the middle class, they start spending just a little bit more on the quality of that consumer product or upgrading from that one phone to the next or something like that.
Yeah.
And those opportunities are boundless.
Yeah.
Before we go into the more detail of today's podcast, I also wanted to share or ask you actually, are we still in the early innings of that plus one model?
Right.
Like, you know, there's probably people listening to this and thinking, oh, it's too late to do manufacturing. You know, like,
because the
golden age of that has ended. Or maybe it hasn't. So are we still early innings in that whole transition process? Or are we kind of in the middle now and there's still opportunity? How would you?
So I would say that it depends on who you're asking and from which perspective. From a company that is looking to arbitrage labor cost advantages, probably we're in the later innings, as Vietnam is probably not the cheapest destination for mass market manufacturing as it might have been.
Like garments.
Precisely. We're seeing from our major garment manufacturing clients that they're moving into automation. They're bringing the global automation that they have in other markets to Vietnam to increase its productivity. So there are other kinds of scale there. So put that group aside. For the rest of the categories, I say we still are in early innings, particularly when we're talking about accessing the consumption market of Vietnam. Vietnam is actually, in a way, arguably in a better position than China was when China was going through its massive post-Olympic sprint. So when China was doing that, it was already at a plus 50% urbanization rate. Vietnam is still early innings in its urbanization, which means every year we're minting a massive percentage of the population into the urban middle class. I think it's like a million people a year, every year, move from the countryside into some sort of city amalgamation and start to behave, consume, spend, socialize, travel like an urban middle class dweller.
Interesting. You know, there's one note that I took here as well. And of course, you spent a lot of time in China. You speak Chinese as well. This conversation today that markets like China that are rich, comparatively speaking, are now becoming old.
Right.
But luckily, some of these countries, like let's say Japan and Korea as well, they've already become rich.
Right.
So they should be okay, at least to take care of that
group.
But then there's just not enough young people now to pay for everything.
Right.
So people have money, but the social systems don't have enough tax revenues, let's say, or productivity to like really sustain that.
Right.
Is that a similar fate inevitable for Vietnam? And in fact, I remember 2 or 3 months ago, the government posted like a meme on Facebook, if I recall correctly.
Really?
Basically encouraging people to have more babies. And it went
That's
viral.
A common
people
trend.
Were laughing about it. It's true. Because like, you know, traditional Vietnamese culture encourages family and you know,
big
having
families.
Babies basically, right? But then young people today, they're under pressure financially or socially for various reasons. And what are your thoughts about that? Is that something to look out for from an economic point of view?
So when you were, I'm a little bit older than you, but when we were in grad school, the key slogan was the middle income trap. That's what it was. And now it's transitioning to middle age before rich. Mm-hmm. So a lot of countries are aging out of their opportunities for growth. So you can become rich and old, like South Korea and Japan, or you can become middle income and old, like China seems to be trending towards. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen to Vietnam? I don't know. Mm. But the reality is that Vietnam has a narrow opportunity of accelerated growth right now.
Mm.
So there's an opportunity for Vietnam to leverage the geopolitical situation right now to really kickstart its development.
Okay.
But that window is going to be open for a relatively short period of time.
Okay. Now, to leverage that window, what is your advice to your existing clients?
Right.
What could they be doing in the short term or even medium term to be keeping that in mind,
would you say? So 6 years ago, 7 years ago, Vietnam was not the top of agendas for the global boards.
Mm.
Now it is. Mm. There's an opportunity for Vietnam to get into the global supply chain that wasn't available to them 6, 7 years ago.
Mm.
But if they don't, the risk is that it'll be very difficult for these global corporations that have massive global supply chains to course correct.
Mm.
Many countries around the world want to get into the semiconductor supply chain.
Mm.
But coming back to it 10 years ago, it's kind of like going back to your high school sweetheart and asking to try again. It's, you know, that ship might have sailed.
Yeah. That's interesting because, as you might know, like Jensen Huang from NVIDIA,
yes.
which is now like the darling of the entire global economy,
some
he visited
memes.
Vietnam, and everyone was saying, including you know the domestic champions like FPT, which is now making semiconductors as well, that they want to come here. They want to build factories and make semiconductors, and that sounds really good. And then one of the thoughts I had, though, is at the end of the day, this is a 100 million person country. It's not China or India, 1.4, I think it is, 1.5.
Or something like that.
And I just share this because it's something to look out for. And that's why you should work with KPMG to de-risk. But everyone's trying to hire like a country manager these days.
Right.
Or leadership or managers or something like this. But then how many of them are there? You know, there's a question of leadership, but also just people having the technical ability to actually make semiconductors, like the line workers at the factory. What's your thought about that? Because China is such a huge population, India, you will have those people. You will be able to find them. Vietnam, harder?
But they didn't initially. People aren't born that way. They need to be trained.
Mm. I
mean, well, KPMG didn't have accountants when Vietnam didn't have accountants that to scale up to what we needed to do at a global scale. And for 30 years ago when we founded KPMG in Vietnam, we had to train them. We had to create the professional services people as we go.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're the only big four, not to toot our own horn, but we're the only big four to have an office in Da Nang.
Mm.
Right? So if you want to hire a big four employee in Da Nang, you can't, right? They don't exist because there's no other big four there. So you have to build your own.
Mm.
So the industry will have to build its own employees, but that's an opportunity to build your own future because you're literally building the talent that are going to run your company. Mm-hmm. So I would argue that it's probably easier to build the team than to bring in the leadership. The leadership, as you pointed out, would be really hard. Obviously, you have the global leadership and you can parachute in somebody from the global, regional or global team who understands the business, understands how to set up a company, but to run it long term and get that tier 2, tier 3 leadership below that person, that's really hard.
Mm.
That will be really hard.
Okay,
and
but is a must in Vietnam.
It's a must, and unfortunately, there are two ways to do it. You can either have a regional or global role and parachute people in, or you can have an in situ team that you grow up over time. The prior, where you're parachuting people in, is faster for growth.
Mm.
And it delivers results now because you're bringing people in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a very expensive model.
Mm.
The only sustainable way to do it is to grow your own team.
Mm.
And to do that takes time.
I know this is a very specific question, but you're probably hiring local talent, of course. Exactly. But also people that were born and raised in Da Nang, you know, ended up living in Ho Chi Minh City, getting that work experience. And they're like, oh, you know, I want to live by the beach now. I'm going to come back home. Is there a lot of those kind of people?
So it's funny. So when we first opened the office, you know, it was all of the Da Nang staff that they'd joined the Da Nang office, and then they'd want to move to Ho Chi Minh City or Hanoi, to move to the big city. Now it's the other way around. Our Hanoi staff or Ho Chi Minh City staff want to move to Da Nang because it's right next to the beach. It's really chill. For a while, we had a PlayStation in the office.
How big is the team there now?
It's about between 1 and 200 people.
Wow. I do want to move on to the next part of our podcast here, Luke, which is about your specialty, which is healthcare. Super big, exciting industry. You know, I've been chatting with all types of people, including your colleagues on the M&A team. There's a lot of interest in healthcare. It's also a very regulated industry, so the barrier of entry is very high. So one way to do that is to contact KPMG's M&A team and make a deal happen.
Exactly.
but let's talk about how you became more involved in healthcare in Vietnam, and what are your thoughts on a high level where that's going at the moment?
Zooming out, Vietnam, as I said before, has like a once in a generation opportunity for FDI to attract FDI into abroad across the spectrum, whether it's healthcare, financial services, manufacturing, consumer goods. Vietnam is a once in a generation opportunity, both on the manufacturing side, but on the consumer side, on the consumption side as well. Healthcare is no exception. Vietnam is actually really, really interesting position to be a regional leader for healthcare innovation. Okay. At KPMG, we divide healthcare into two areas. You have clinical, everything that touches a patient. So that's a hospital, that's the infrastructure around the patient, all the infrastructure for the doctors, training, all that. So put that in one bucket. And then we have life sciences. Life sciences are the drugs, of the equipment, the supplies, all the stuff, that the ancillary stuff that goes to make the patient well. That's another, they're different because they're differently governed, so we separate them. On the life sciences side, let's talk about that for a second. Vietnam has a fantastic opportunity. Vietnam is 100 million population. It's a relatively drug naive country, meaning that you don't, people aren't on six different types of drugs across the country. So there's
that's a good thing.
That's very much a good thing. It's very much a good thing. So there's actually an opportunity, if Vietnam gets it right, to link its digital backbone of that it's building across the hospitals to drive clinical trials in Vietnam, which could be a massive game changer for Vietnam's pathway into innovation.
I'm surprised in a good way by your answer, because a lot of my friends who are those aspiring scientists that you once were, that are Vietnamese who study in the U.S., for example, they refuse to even consider working in Vietnam because of the lack of that.
Okay.
They've literally told me that. They're like, no, we never consider working in Vietnam. And, you know, all the research and clinical trials and all this stuff happens in the U.S., which is true, which is like 80%.
Right. It is true.
But Vietnam's opening. Who are the kind of industry players driving that at the moment? You don't have to name specific companies.
Well, I mean, domestically, there are domestic institutions like the Pasteur Street are doing fantastic infectious disease clinical trials. ORCU, Oxford University Clinical Research Unit, is a full name, is doing fantastic stuff on clinical trials and in infectious diseases. On the private sector side, the main leader right now is AstraZeneca. Merck is getting into the game, or as we call it overseas, MSD. GSK and hopefully Pfizer and other big players are getting into clinical trials in Vietnam. The key is the regulatory approvals. Just like getting a business license, just like getting a driver's license, getting through the bureaucracy needs to be efficient. So when Philippines can do it in 6 weeks, in Vietnam takes 6 months, it's difficult to bring it to Vietnam. So there is an impetus for Vietnam to streamline the process for both the clinical trials approvals, but also the drug approvals. And if they can do that, it could be huge.
Okay. So you yourself as an individual driving some of that, you can call it advocacy or just industry leadership, working with institutions to understand and see the potentials. That's all happening right now.
It is. It's happening right now.
Okay.
And so we put some numbers behind it. And if you think about like how trials run, it's per patient, per medicine. If you scale up to the country of Vietnam, it could be a massive, massive revenue opportunity. And the problem for Vietnam is that the hospitals are in a pickle. So the government spends 6% of its GDP on healthcare. It wants its hospitals to provide more and better care for its its people, because that's what you want.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has a limited amount of money. So it has to either charge patients more, which is not good because a lot of patients don't have the money to spend, rely more on foreign funds, so through private health insurance, which is a great option, or come up with other sources of financing. And one great way could be to run research inside of Vietnamese public hospitals.
So the hospitals are also incentivized to participate.
Correct.
Basically. Okay.
Correct. It becomes a revenue stream that helps subsidize their operations.
Okay. And so I'm sure the global pharma companies have to play a role in that.
Yeah.
And do you find that to be through like education to those global boards, or the teams operating here pretty aware of that now? What's that like little, you know, what's that grease that you can apply as one of the facilitators here to make all that happen?
So I think actually the pharma companies are now on board. It was hard to convince them 5-6 years ago this was a real thing, but I think they're switching their mindset from proactively trying to include Vietnam in global trials to now being told to include Vietnam in global trials unless there's a demographic or other reason why not to. So there's a switch there. That's really important.
Okay. That was recent.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I think the key barrier will be actually going back to our analogy before about semiconductors, it's management. So you could run a trial. You have the people to run the trial. You can train those people to trial operators, but the management of a trial is tricky and it's super high risk. So you have to do it right. So coming up with the people that can run the trial in Vietnam at scale will be the next major hurdle.
Let's say all this happens and the success story, you know, unfolds, and I'm sure there's various scenarios here, but could Vietnam end up becoming that regional hub for innovation simply because of the population size is so large? There's opportunities on both the government and pharma company side and everyone else in the middle. Is that a possibility?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I think so. So if the stars align, we ran a couple scenarios, but if the stars align, then you know, Vietnam could definitely become that location. It has a young population. It also has a diverse population. Between affluent city dwellers to people that are unfortunately dealing with infectious diseases. So you have a wide variety of conditions, wide variety of people, a large population. It's, you know, from the south and the tropics to temperate in the north. It's a very interesting market.
Okay. I want to touch upon some parallel things to you as well, but also the firm and also potential listeners of the show here, which are a little bit about other markets and sectors to your best of knowledge. Last year, and I had your colleague on the show actually just like a few weeks ago, if I recall, he was talking about M&A activity significantly dipped last year. It's expected to be fairly moderate this year as well. You know, there are deals to be had, but cost of capital is high. People with cash want to come in.
Right.
What do you see on that front? Are deals going to get done maybe within healthcare sector as well? Or do you see...
Unfortunately, making a major FDI deal is like buying an investment property you're going to rent out. It's the same equation. The availability of cheap cash and your risk profile. How much risk are you willing to take? Fortunately, based on what we're seeing with the Fed, the global cost of capital doesn't seem to be going up as fast as it was in the past. Inflation seems to have stabilized globally. So the cost of capital and inflation seems to be stabilizing. And the world seems to be not falling apart as fast as it was, say, 4 or 5 months ago. So I'm hopeful that things have at least stabilized. Now, as we get closer to the U.S. elections and we get through other major issues, hopefully we could price in the risk and the deals will start picking up to where they were before.
What other sectors? So healthcare, very clear to me, especially with your insight about how the pharma companies and other institutions can operate, and just it being an exciting space for research and clinical trials, let's say. What other sectors, with that said, do you think will drive Vietnam moving forward?
So we've built our team locally to kind of chase after what we call the big four sectors. We follow our clients and their interest in investing in Vietnam. We follow where the market is going. And number one for us, our largest one, partially because of my background, is healthcare. Number two is, no surprise, consumer markets, everything consumer. I think that is going to be the next major story for Vietnam, the growth of consumption as Vietnam moves from secondary economy, meaning the manufacturing of goods for exports, to a tertiary economy driven by consumption.
Yeah.
Next is going to be manufacturing. The growth of manufacturing could be huge with the China Plus One, but the multiple into the rest of the economy is probably smaller than consumption, because consumption is higher on the economic food chain, and then it has more of a trickle-down effect. And then financial services. There's going to be a massive, it could be a massive growth in financial services going forward, particularly if the banks are brought back.
Digitized. Well, Luke, thank you so much for your insights today. It's been a pleasure hearing from you, learning from you. And I always like to finish with one question to my guests, which is, you know, we've brought you onto the program today to learn from you, and hopefully our audience has learned a thing or two as well. What would you like to learn? So I ask you that question because we're all learners here.
Sure.
And we're not experts in everything. What is that one industry, or it could be a topic, personal or professional, perhaps it's Vietnamese language, hopefully not, that you would like to take on this year so we can better inform you on this podcast?
I'd like to know, I think I have a better line of access to the voice of customers of Vietnam. I want to know, what does the emerging middle class, just out of college, got their first job, you know, she has her first paycheck, she now has her first disposable income. How is she deciding to spend her time, her money? What does she want to do, travel? That's the kind of insight I want.
Okay.
So if you could provide us, your listeners, a direct line into the emerging Gen Z consumer, that's what I want.
Interesting. I'm thinking about that all the time. I wouldn't say I have the answer for you. I mean, I have various answers. But how about you try to answer that question yourself, just based on what you know?
Right.
Like, I mean, I think I know, right? But do I actually?
Yeah.
What do you think, just given what you observe and you going out there talking to people?
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time just meeting with the KPMG team. But that's obviously a micro subset of all of Vietnam. But the key is just to get out in the market and walk shopping malls, get outside of Ho Chi Minh City. I mean, it's so easy to think that, you know, District 1 of Ho Chi Minh City is the whole country.
Yeah, but it's not.
It's not. Yeah. No, there's you know, another 99 million people out there.
Yeah. Sometimes, and Vietcetera, obviously, we have a very large Gen Z audience.
Sure.
Sometimes when I go travel or just live here in Ho Chi Minh City, I'll go to Nguyen Huy Walking Street.
Of course.
I'll go to some, like, Suat Juo place in, like, Haiphong. Right. I was just there a couple months ago. And, like, you know, on a Friday night, I would just see like hundreds of people at like X place, or like there's that new Tudok walking park on the river
with
all the sunflowers.
Isn't that amazing?
By the way,
it's amazing.
And you know, I would just hear that different accents and that kinds of people coming out there, and I'm thinking like, you know, who are these people? And the first question I also think is, how many of these people know Vietcetera? I'm very curious. You know, in Ho Chi Minh City, it'd probably be a
probably
much larger proportion.
Think, yeah.
Yeah, perhaps. I actually don't know. But then again, you go to, you know, I surprise myself sometimes too. I go to like a Suat Juo place in Haiphong, and, you know, surprisingly, a larger proportion of those people know more than I thought. Like sometimes I just go around and ask. Like one of my favorite things I do is, like, I'm on the plane, I like to stand while I'm flying, actually, like in the back in the galley.
Really?
And I'll just talk to the flight attendants.
That's cool.
Oh, you know, I'm new to Vietnam. I just heard about this company. Do you know anything about it? And do a little market research, and some of them will say stuff. It's actually really funny. But anyways, we'll attempt to do that for you, Luke, and the bigger KPMG team on this
appreciate
podcast.
That.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, let us know and keep up what you're doing. You're a resource to all of us.
Thank you so much, Luke, and good encouragement for the team as well. Thank you, Luke, for your insights today on the Vietnam Innovators podcast. Hope to have you and or your colleagues from KPMG on the show again very soon. For those of you listening in, thank you so much for your support every week. Luke Treloar, he's the partner of KPMG Vietnam with a focus on healthcare and strategy. Message him or find him on LinkedIn if you have any more questions for him. Thank you so much and see you next week. Goodbye.
Insights illuminate better choices, allowing us to see differently and do more. With KPMG, you have the people and technologies to uncover insights and turn them into action. When we act on insight with the right people by our side, opportunity is everywhere. Let insights reveal new opportunities.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every single week. So don't forget to subscribe to Vietnam Innovators by Vietcetera on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and the Vietnam Innovators YouTube channel for more interesting content.